It was past midday when we arrived at a crowded village. We were shocked by how noisy it was in the middle of the war. It was the biggest village we had been to so far. It sounded like a marketplace. People were playing music and dancing, children were running around, and there was that familiar good smell of cooked cassava leaf and rich palm oil. As we walked through the village trying to find a place to sit away from the crowd, we saw some familiar faces. People hesitantly waved to us. We found a log under a mango tree and sat down. A woman whose face wasn't among the familiar ones came and sat facing us. "You," she pointed at me. "I know you," she said. I didn't know her face, but she insisted that she knew my family and me. She told me that Junior had come to the village a few weeks earlier looking for me, and that she had also seen my mother, father, and little brother in the next village, which was about 2 days' walk. She told us the direction and ended by saying, "In that village, there are lots of people from Matrujong and the Sierra Rutile mining area. All of you might be able to find your families or news about them." She got up and began dancing to the Sukus music that was playing as she left us. We all began laughing. I wanted to leave right away, but we decided to spend the night in the village. Also, we wanted Saidu to rest, even though he kept telling us that he was fine. I was so happy that my mother, father, and two brothers had somehow found one another. Perhaps my mother and father have gotten back together, I thought. We went to the river for a swim, and there we played hide-and-seek swimming games, running along the river's edge, screaming, "Cuckoo!" to commence the game. Everyone was smiling. That night, we stole a pot of rice and cassava leaves. We ate it under the coffee trees at the edge of the village, washed the pots, and returned them. We had no place to sleep, so we chose a veranda on one of the houses after everyone had gone inside. I didn't sleep that night. My hands began shaking as soon as my friends started snoring. I had a feeling that something bad was going to happen. The dogs began to cry and ran from one end of the village to the other. Alhaji woke up and sat by me. "The dogs woke me up," he said. "I couldn't sleep to begin with," I replied. "Maybe you're just anxious about seeing your family," he chuckled. "I am too." Alhaji stood up. "Don't you think it is strange the way the dogs are crying?" One dog had come near the veranda on which we sat and was vigorously crying. A few more dogs joined in. Their crying pierced my heart. "Yes, they sound very human," I said. "That is the same thing I was thinking," Alhaji yawned. "I think dogs see things we do not see. Something must be wrong," he sat down. We became quiet, just staring into the night. The dogs cried all night long, one continuing till the sky was completely clear. Babies then began to take up the cry. People started getting up, so we had to vacate the veranda. Alhaji and I began waking our friends. When he shook Saidu, Saidu was still. "Get up, we have to go now." He shook Saidu harder as we heard the people on whose veranda we had slept getting ready to come outside. "Saidu, Saidu," Kene coaxed him. "Maybe he fainted again," he said. A man came out and greeted us. He carried a small bucket of water. He had a smile on his face that told us he had known all along that we were on the veranda. "This will do it," the man sprinkled some of the cold water from his bucket on Saidu. But Saidu didn't move. He just lay on his stomach, his face buried in the dust. His palms were turned upside down and they were pale. The man turned him around and checked his pulse. Saidu's forehead was sweaty and wrinkled. His mouth was slightly opened, and there was a path of dry tears at the corners of his eyes down to his cheeks. "Do you boys know anyone in this village?" the man asked. We all said no, shaking our heads. He exhaled heavily, put his bucket down, and placed both his hands on his head. "Who is the oldest?" he asked, looking at Alhaji. Kene raised his hand. They stepped outside the veranda and the man whispered something in his ear. Kene began to cry on the man's shoulder. It was then that we admitted that Saidu had left us. Everyone else was crying, but I couldn't cry. I felt dizzy and my eyes watered. My hands began shaking again. I felt the warmth inside my stomach and my heart was beating slowly, but at a heavy rate. The man and Kene walked away. And when they returned, they brought with them two men who carried a wooden stretcher. They placed Saidu on it and ask us to follow them. Cyrus' body was washed and prepared for burial that same day. He was wrapped in white linen and placed in a wooden coffin that was set on a table in the living room of the man whose veranda we had slept on.